This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Thank you, my adoring public. You know, just because you're a golfer doesn't mean that you're an athlete. That's kind of the beauty of the game. 40 can be a bad back nine and be the number of inches in your waistline, or in my case, a sperm count. But these days, it certainly seems like anyone who is an athlete also wants to be a golfer. Just take two-thirds of the guests on my sofa tonight. Pitching ace John Lester has a trio of World Series rings, and three-point legend Ray Allen has won a pair of NBA championships and a gold medal. But the only game they really want to talk about is the Royal and Ancient. To join me representing those who've played golf and developed breasts instead of pectorals, I brought along my good buddy Mark Calcavecchia, who has managed to lift the claret jug without ever lifting anything heavier than his wallet. It's three sports, three stars, and one really nice sofa. Ray Allen, John Lester, Mark Calcavecchia, thanks for joining me here in Orlando today. This is going to be fun. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, actually, it may not be fun. I'm really not sure. But Mark, in 1989, you came to Europe and you played in the BMW Championship, which was one of my high points in my career. I managed to win that and thought it was great until they gave me a piece of plexiglass as the trophy. And I played with you in the last round of the 89 Open, which you won. What do you remember about how I played that day?
I don't think you played that great. I think I remember beating you by a few, but
yeah.
Well, I was in the bushes all the way up the 11th hole, and I was kind of having my own problems.
I remember.
And then I lucked in a putt and was kind of muttering to myself most of the day. And then when I flew the chip in the hole on 12, after that, I hit it pretty good.
I said afterwards that that was the finest six holes in a row that I'd ever seen. Ray, the Heat were facing elimination in the 2013 NBA Championships. It was Game 6. Is that as much pressure as you've been under?
Well, for most people that don't know the story, in 2001, we were playing in Philly when I was in Milwaukee. There was about 3 minutes to go in the game, and, you know, Philly pretty much was about to win the Eastern Conference Finals to move on to the NBA Finals. So they brought these yellow ropes out, and they lined them around the court. So I was thinking to myself, I was like, wow, this is messed up. The game's not even over with, and they're already crowning them Eastern Conference champions. You know, stranger things have happened. So fast forward now to 2013, and you could see it if you look at the shot, and the ushers are sitting there holding the rope. And this whole time, we're pissed off because Spurs are cheering, and their fans are up there going crazy, and all Heat fans, you know, there are Heat fans that have left the building, assuming the game is over. And, you know, we're just like, no, this is not how it's supposed to go down. And so we just kind of grinded away at it.
John, what's the most pressure-packed situation, you know, that you find yourself in? Is it like Game 7 of the World Series, or is there anything like that?
No, because I was in the bullpen, so it was completely out of the ordinary for me. You know, as a starter, you know, you got your routine to warm up before a game. And you know, whether it be swings or shots or whatever, I've got pitches. And they call down and, hey, get him up and, you know, get going. They had a plan, and, of course, nothing ever goes according to plan. Kyle was supposed to go 5. I was going to go in the 6th and get it to Chapman in the 9th was the, if everything goes well, plan. Well, Kyle got hit around a little bit. They got me up in the 4th. So it was just all hell breaks loose, and it's something I'm not used to. So a lot of the unknown stuff for me is hard to control because as a starting pitcher, like I said, you have a routine. So it's known, like, hey, game starts at 7:10 or it starts at 1:20 every day. So you know what to expect. Where when you're down there, it's a whole bag of Cracker Jacks that you're not used to that, you know, you just get thrown into the fire and have to figure it out.
John, how much of it is, you know, when you get to the mound and you know that you've got to make a perfect pitch, how much of it is the act of doing it being, you know, in the present?
I mean, I know I've told myself numerous times on the mound, it's either going to be my night or their night. You know, it's just one of those deals where you feel like you've executed to that point and you know what, this is the pitch, this is the right time to throw it. And for me, sometimes it's a matter of, hey, man, I think I'm better than you right now, and hopefully you do it.
A calmness that comes with it? Because, I mean, in baseball and basketball in particular, I mean, we complain in golf if somebody makes a noise. You know, you're playing with people yelling at you or whatever. Does that all of a sudden get quiet?
I mean, I think the older I've gotten, it's been easier to drown out noises. Now, there's been times where, you know, like you were talking about earlier, how good are you when you're bad? When you're not going so well, that noise gets pretty loud.
There's one thing, and you can attest to this, John. And golf is different because basically every time you play, you're away. But for us, we're home or away, so it changes. So when you're on the free throw line or the mound, at home, it's so quiet. And if you ever make the mistake of looking at the lady in the crowd and she's over here like this, like biting her nail, you start to think, wow, maybe I should be nervous. So don't look at her. When you're on the road, you're in an opposing building, everybody's loud and big brick sign up, and you can't look at that at the same time. So I always say, when you're on the road, you're going to bring them to their knees. When you're at home, you bring them to their feet.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Well, noise doesn't bother me. You know that.
Well, no,
I've seen Nick Faldo shush a guy from 100 yards away. You know, he opened up a beer can from two holes over. Shh.
Well, Monty, he can hear a butterfly fart. Yeah. I used to love playing with great players, and I was lucky enough to play with Arnold and, you know, with Tom Watson and my hero, Lee Trevino. Ray, you played with Michael Jordan and, you know, or against Michael Jordan and against LeBron, and then eventually you're a teammate of LeBron's. Who would you rather be on a team with?
Well, I grew up with, you know, we used to get the Wheaties box with the MJ poster inside of it, and I had all his posters on the wall. Never met him before in my life. And my second preseason game was against the Chicago Bulls. And I'm this 21-year-old kid thinking to myself, like, where am I? And what am I doing? Like, this is the greatest of all times, you know, Michael Jordan. To me, he's just the way he played the game. He played with power, but at the same time with finesse. LeBron is so dominant, you know, physically.
So big.
Yeah, he's so big. And one thing about LeBron is when I first got to Miami, he's a self-proclaimed not a great free throw shooter. So every free throw game that we had, he was like, come on, let's get in. Nobody at his level, I thought, you know, ever did that around me because he wanted to be better and he knew where his weaknesses were.
Cal, you spent a lot of time around Jack Nicklaus. You played against Jackie. You played with Tiger as well. Again, you know, two different players.
I first met Mr. Nicklaus when I moved to North Palm Beach when I was 13 years old. And as you said, played junior golf and high school golf against Jackie. And Jack came and watched almost every one of our matches. So it was a thrill. I was just a little kid coming from a small town in Nebraska to next thing I know, Jack Nicklaus is watching us play nine-hole matches. So it was pretty cool. And he was nothing
That'll put your shorts in a bunch.
He was nothing but fantastic to me right from the get-go, from eighth grade on. So. And again, I've seen Tiger in 2000. We played 36-hole practice round at St. Andrews, and I think he made 18 or 19 birdies in 36 holes without even really trying. So if there was ever a tournament that was over before it started, that was it.
John, was there a pitcher that you admired growing up or that, you know, you faced off against?
Yeah, I mean, growing up was Randy Johnson. Well, same thing in Seattle.
Randy Johnson beamed me once.
Did he?
Yeah, which I always thought was a badge of honor. Yeah.
But, you know, obviously everybody's not 6'10 and can throw 100 miles an hour. So as I got older and got around the game, Andy Pettitte was kind of my guy. I ended up pitching very similar to the way he pitched, being left-handed and the, you know, fastball cutter. That was kind of the guy for me that, you know, first day I would go in there and look at film, he'd be the guy I'd pull up for the next team I was facing.
John, you've hoisted three World Series trophies. How do they compare? Was one better than the other?
I don't think any of them are better than the other. I think each individual one is in different points in my career, and I had different responsibilities, per se. So, you know, coming off of my cancer treatments and stuff like that and getting back in 07 meant a lot personally because of just being a part of that team and getting back. 13 was the year that I was really dependent upon to go out there and actually be the number one and do my job and have the team on your back you know, signing with the Cubs. I was brought in there to win it. So to do that and to do it early, I think each, like I said, each individual one is so different that they're unique, and you have so many stories and so many different times in that season where you didn't think you would do it, but we were able to do it those 3 years.
That's huge pressure to be brought in to specifically, you know, do that. I don't understand baseball at all. I love it. But we'll get to that
okay.
in a little bit. Ray, you've won 2 NBA championships and an Olympic gold. What's the moment that stands out for you?
Probably the Olympic gold medal, you know, when you go back to it, because if you ever have an opportunity to go to an Olympics, it's an amazing spectacle. And it was amazing because I seen, you know, the delegation from Italy and from Australia and Germany, and everybody was in sync, and it was looking at the world right in front of you. And at the same time, they were so excited because they're looking at NBA players that they saw on TV. So the admiration was intense, and it was a feeling like no other.
Is there a special pressure, you know, being part of a team like that that is just absolutely supposed to win?
You know, there was one time we were playing, and the referee, I remember his face and everything, because I still see him when he's reffing international games. And the guy, I'm dribbling the ball, and the guy literally, like, smacked me across the arm, steals the ball, and goes down the end of the floor. And I'm looking at the referee like, that was a foul. And then next time down the floor, I'm like, okay, he's going to let us play a little bit. So I kind of nudge the guy, and he calls a foul on me. I'm like,
uh-oh.
Dude, like, this is unbalanced. He goes, you're American. You can take the foul. I was like, oh,
really?
So that's how this is going down. That was one time where I said, you know what, I don't know if I want to play this game right now. But, you know, we ended up winning. There was a lot of pressure on us.
John, how much of it is, you know, when you get to the mound and you know that you've got to make a perfect pitch, how much of it is the act of doing it, being, you know, in the present?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes, I mean, I know I've told myself numerous times on the mound, it's either going to be my night or their night. You know, it's just one of those deals where you feel like you've executed to that point, and you know what, this is the pitch, this is the right time to throw it, and you're either going to hit it or you're not. And, you know, hopefully if they do hit it, it's at somebody. But for me, sometimes it's a matter of, hey, man, I think I'm better than you right now. And it's going to be my night, and you just throw it. And hopefully you do it.
Have any of you had a moment in your life that you'd require a mulligan?
I think sports is so imperfect, you know, for all of us. It's hard to say what I would like to take back, because I don't learn anything if I don't go through the adversity. I think about everything that I did, you know, whether it's relationships with a teammate, with a coach. The game itself takes care of itself. When I miss a shot, it just prompts me to get up early the next day and work on my craft.
Mulligans in Life are presented by Farmers Insurance. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
Talk to me about some of the coaches that you've had. Bob Torrence was mine mm-hmm. for such a long time, and you know, he was so Scottish that he barely spoke English.
Right.
Yeah.
He was hard to understand.
I know that you worked with Butch and with Peter Kostas as well.
I did. I worked with started working with Peter in 1984 for 10 years, and then Butch Harmon for 10 years, and then back with Peter. Those two guys I consider the two best coaches in golf.
Yeah.
And I go see Peter, and he says, okay, give me 5 swings. He goes, okay, here's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like really amazing. You don't have to stand there all day and hit balls. He can kind of give you a couple things literally in 10 minutes and kind of get you back on track that fast. And it's just, I can do it on the range in Minnesota. My wife can do a 4-swing video sequence, and he'll text me back and say, okay, here's what you're doing.
Yeah, it's really changed, mm-hmm. you know, the digital age and teaching, I guess. But, John, what does a pitching coach actually do?
A lot. I mean, each coach is different. Each coach has a different language. I had to learn Chris Bosio's, how they talked in the Cubs organization, because everybody's different. Everybody talks a different way, as opposed to, like, a scouting report or maybe just kind of the steps in a delivery.
So did they look at your mechanics on video and mm-hmm. spot differences from years past?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll get, you know, like I said, just like golf, I'll get where I'll start pushing my hands, carrying my hands back, as opposed to keeping them up and down, you know, just from trying to throw the ball too hard or trying to make the ball do too much. you start doing this and you get late and then you get around it. You know, like I said, it's more of like a management side of things. Like they come out there and, I mean, they could be making stuff up half the time. I don't know. But
yeah, will, right. will they tell you that while you're pitching, like mm-hmm. from the dugout?
Not from the dugout, but like you'll have meetings, you know, in between, while you're pitching, you're allowed one mound visit. So they'll come out there and they'll be like, hey, man, let's get your hands up and down a little bit more rhythm going and
walk away. So is that what's going on in those little talks, you know, when they come out and say, you know, try not to this up somewhere.
Yeah, basically. I mean, sometimes they come out there and literally, there was one year where I didn't hear a word a pitching coach said just because, you know, like that was my mental break for that inning. Usually when they're out there, it's not a good situation happening.
Yeah.
I just would shut down. You know, I would kind of dictate meetings. You know, I'd be like, all right, I'm good, and just turn around and walk away, and they'd walk away and give you that mental break.
Right. Ray, I cannot imagine anybody teaching you anything. There's a fluidity to a shooting guard where the ball comes off the floor and it's almost one movement.
When I was in college, my example was Reggie Miller. When he shoots, he always crosses his hands. And I said, well, there's no perfect form, just the same in golf. Each person has to take what they have and work it. I tell people all day long, whatever you practice it perfectly. So when you get into a game, you know exactly what you're doing.
Because it doesn't make perfect, but it makes permanent, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like sitting on the range, I've spent countless hours shooting free throws and shooting threes. And that's why I can play golf a little bit, because I take what I know in basketball onto the driving range.
So when you're running down there shooting a three, it's just sort of reactionary, isn't it? I mean, from your practice, you catch it and you're not thinking about your form or anything, right? You're just catching it.
You don't think about it. Because in basketball, you have to be proactive. You basically, now your body's so dialed in that you just get the ball and you throw it up there. That's what it feels like to us. To most people, you say, look at his form, look at his lift.
Yeah.
But it's just throwing the ball up there after you've practiced so much.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor. Why is Farmer supporting my show? Well, I've interviewed over 100 guests, ranging from legendary golfers to presidents to celebrities. And just like Farmers is smarter from their unbelievable but true experiences, from each of my interviews, I've gained great knowledge that I can carry forward. Well, from most of them. Anyway, thank you, Farmers, for supporting my show.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
All right, then. Now back to the show.
All right, man, this is rapid fire. Everyone knows the rules. It's pointless. Start the clock. What car did you drive in high school?
I didn't drive a car.
Pickup and a Volvo.
Pickup and a Volvo?
Yeah, I had to rotate with my parents.
Plymouth Sports Fury, a tank.
A Plymouth Sports Fury?
Yeah, 69. I had to use a screwdriver to get in the trunk.
What car did you drive after your first big payday?
Range Rover.
Denali.
Of course.
What was it, 9/11?
Yeah.
Of course. What music would we hear on your iPod?
R&B.
Country.
Rock.
Yeah, opera. What was your best subject in high school?
Math.
None.
Leaving.
Yeah, leaving at 17. Yeah. If Hollywood were to make a movie of your life, who should star as you?
Dule Hill.
Yeah?
I don't know. Somebody.
Let's go with Mark Wahlberg.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Marky
yeah.
Mark.
Very similar.
Similar abs.
What's so damn funny?
Similar abs, yeah.
See
Marky
the...
Mark, right? Mark?
Cynical crew. Who's your favorite player on tour?
Phil Mickelson.
Dustin Johnson.
Reggie Fowler.
My favorite adult beverage is?
Tito.
Yeah.
Yes, alcohol is fine.
Virgin Arnold Palmer.
Oh, really?
Just not a John Daly.
An Arnold. That's right, you don't drink.
Yeah, I don't drink.
You don't drink. The night you won the Ryder Cup, who's the most fun person at the party?
You.
Me?
Yeah, you.
It's the night that you, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. That's right, you won that one?
We did win that one.
Yeah.
The only one.
I vomited on Lanny Watkins later that night.
Did you?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. What's your favorite course to play with friends?
Augusta.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'd have to say the Augusta.
I don't have any friends.
Yeah, I think we've already determined that.
None of us could find one.
That's right. And that's it for rapid fire. Somebody stop the clock. You know, sometimes overcoming adversity kind of defines who you are. Mark, your last conversation with your dad was you were telling him that you'd played particularly well in a mini tour event. And in the morning, when you learned that he'd passed away, your mom said, you know, go on and go ahead and play.
Yeah, I was in Orlando, Florida, and 1985. And, you know, I knew, obviously, he was sick, and but I didn't think he was gonna pass away. And he was in the hospital, and talked to him the night before, and I shot 65 in the first round. And he said, "That's great, buddy. I think you're really turning the corner. I think, you know, I think this is it." And called my mom the next morning, and he'd passed away that night. And, you know, back then, we didn't have cell phones yet. So after I kind of was bawling my eyes out and got over that, I looked at the, you know, I didn't think I could play. And she said, "I think your dad would want you to." So I looked at my watch, and I had about 20 minutes to tee time, and I was about 15 minutes from the course. So 100 miles an hour later, I got there like 4 minutes before my tee time and ran on the tee and made 16 pars and 2 bogeys somehow, and beat a guy in a playoff on the first hole and won the tournament. So I think he had a little something to do with that.
That's amazing. Ray, you were a military kid, and military kids move, you know, so often. Tell me a little bit about growing up.
My dad, he was a welder. So we lived in California, South Carolina, England, Germany. About every 3.5 years, we would pick up and move.
Air Force, right?
Yeah, Air Force. So it was great because, you know, we were always on these bases, you know, remote bases around the world. So we had the best schools, best teachers, best everything educationally. It's almost like being in a private school. I moved to South Carolina, and I ended up from eighth grade on to when I left to go to UConn for college. It became it was a public school off base. Mm. Best thing that happened to me in my life,
yeah.
Because I was no longer protected. I got to South Carolina and I had to learn to fight. I had to learn to like protect myself. And when I got to the eighth grade and I saw these eighth grade kids that had beards and mustaches, I was like, I got to get a little bigger and stronger. And it helped me definitely to get to where I am today.
John, you were having a great rookie career when you got news that I think all of us dread, you know, cancer.
I mean, for me, I think it's completely different than what my parents went through. I think that for them, it was a lot harder than it was for me, just because I was young and naive to the whole situation. I mean, obviously, going through the treatments weren't exactly easy, but...
Did you go through spring chemo or radiation?
Yeah, chemo. 6 rounds of chemo. Seeing what my parents went through, I think, was harder for me than actually going through the treatment. I'm an only child, so there was a lot of worry and effort on their end to make sure that I was doing okay. You know, they went through a lot for that 8 month, 9 month period that, you know, was kind of the whole ordeal. And then to see their faces when I got back to the big leagues and pitched and got a win that night, and to come out after that was, you know, was kind of made it all.
What was the crowd like that night?
It was cool. It was actually in Cleveland. Made the start there, and my dad usually doesn't come to my games when I pitch. He gets too worked up, and he sat. They got him really good tickets. He was like 3 rows up behind the dugout, so I saw him every time I walked into the dugout, and he was a nervous wreck, and it was cool. It was a cool experience to finally get back, but like I said, I think looking back on it, it was a lot harder for them than it was for me to go through that.
Ray and John, what do you take from your individual sports to the golf course?
I remember I was about 25. I was sitting on in the fairway, and I had my wedge in my hand, 100 yards out, and I was saying to myself, I don't know where this ball is about to go right now.
We've all felt like that.
This was like, I could shank it, I could hook it, I could chili dip it, I could scull it. All these things were in play. And then I thought for a second, I was like, wow, this is kind of how I am on the basketball court. So what golf helped me do with basketball is start to say I need to work on every single thing that I do, because I would go to the range then, hit my driver, and then say I'm ready to go play. So then I started kind of breaking the game down, and it helped me start breaking my basketball game down because I started working on the left side, working on the right side, working from behind the basket. But more importantly, making a free throw was like making a putt. You know, the work that I put in is what I got out of it, so.
I should have gone first. He's way ahead of me on that stuff. Golf for me is a release,
yeah.
Especially during the season, it's a release.
You don't play in the off season?
Not that much,
yeah.
No. Big thing, we got a little game that we play that gets the little competitive juices going.
Who do you play with?
Arietta, Kyle Hendricks, man, this guy could just wake up out of bed and shoot 75, 78,
really?
And he hates playing. yeah. We'll get him out there every once in a while. A couple of the coaches love playing. So it's like a mixed bag every trip. Who, you know, depends on the rotation, who can play. You know, I think that's that competitiveness. I think for me as a pitcher, it's the, you know, pitch to pitch, so shot to shot. Anything can happen. Like you're saying, you name off all these bad things and all these good things that can happen. Now you just got to try to execute it. And that's where I think the pitching side of it helps a little bit. I think when you get out there and you can kind of change the competitiveness as far as just not grinding on the mound all the time, you know, it kind of gives you a mental break.
Who's the best non-golfer athlete that you guys have played with?
Well, he actually did go on to play the Champions Tour, but John Brody could really play some good golf, you know, way back in the 80s. And I did play a lot of golf with John Smoltz when he was with the Braves back in the 80s also.
I got to say Steph. I played with Steph
quite
a bit over the last couple of years. Hits the ball great, and everybody seen him playing the web.com tour this past year.
Isn't it funny, the thought of, you know, maybe the two greatest shooters of all time playing golf together?
Yeah.
Long range.
Long range.
I think it's all about just having patience, you know, and Mark, you can speak to that. You have to wait for the game to come around to you. And, you know, for us, you could shoot it from anywhere on the floor, but you have to pick and choose your spots.
You know, and that's what Tiger always said, just, you know, take what the course gives you.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I think that's a really good thing to kind of remember. Well, for everybody, me as well, and that's kind of one of my weak suits. I get a little impatient out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, no, you know, I get a little cranky out there and try to force a few things, and it's tough.
Well, not just basketball with you. You had that movie with Denzel.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, he got game. You think you'd make a sequel like he had game?
Interesting. I actually spoke with Spike a couple of days ago.
Really?
Yeah, and we talk about it all the time. This year, we're coming up to the 20-year anniversary, so we toiled around with a couple of different topics. You know, having me at this point retired, having children that play the game, so there are a couple of different possibilities. So we had to talk about it a little bit more.
He doesn't look a day older, does he?
No, he doesn't, actually. He doesn't.
Hair. I had a hair back then.
Okay, this is true or false, all right. Kalk once won a tournament with bacon-themed pants.
True.
That is true, yes. Well done.
Really?
Well, we were in Des Moines, Iowa, a.k.a. Bacon Capital of the
Baconsville.
World.
Baconsville.
And happened to be the Pork Festival, their National Pork Convention that week, so it all kind of tied in.
John spells his name without an H, but his father, John, spells it with one.
It's true.
I'm not asking you, you know.
Hey, it's true.
I was going to say true, too. I was going to say that.
You looked at me, so I was thinking it was me.
That was my fault.
Was
yeah.
I got confused in the
I did look at you. That was totally my fault. Sorry. Ray owns an organic fast food restaurant.
False.
Yeah, I'm a false.
Sorry, boy.
Really?
Yeah. Not only does he not drink, he goes with organic fast food.
I thought it was, he looked too healthy. I thought it was a trick question.
Yeah.
He does look disturbingly healthy, doesn't he?
Disturbingly healthy.
That's probably because
While shooting, he got game. Ray lost a game of one-on-one against Denzel Washington.
False.
Yes.
That is false.
That'd be false.
Yeah. Denzel's pretty good, but...
False.
Mark's ringtone is from Iron Maiden, the song Trooper.
True.
Yes. Yes, it is. Last year on a road trip, John was accidentally locked in an airplane bathroom.
True.
No, that is not true, but it was pretty good. Yeah.
That'd be funny, though.
Yeah, it would. When he was 13, John was offered a professional soccer contract from a team in Italy.
False.
It's true.
I wasn't going to answer that one. I didn't make eye contact with you on that
time.
You saw me
look
at it. Notice
I just looked straight
away.
Ahead on that
wow.
one.
Yeah. Impressive.
Yeah. You know, there's one thing, you know, being offered a contract as a professional soccer player somewhere else, but in Italy?
I played soccer up until high school. I mean, I was 6'2 at the time, so I was bigger than everybody else, and that was probably about 60 pounds ago, so I could move a little bit different than I do now. Luckily, my mom was there also. I was going to take the contract. It was probably for like $500. I don't even know.
While recovering from a rather boisterous bachelor party, Mark momentarily forgot his wife's name during their wedding ceremony.
True.
True.
That's false. That is just, it's brilliant that they thought it was true.
Yeah.
Because it's, awesome. It's actually likely.
I looked at his face, though. He's like, yeah, that did happen.
The closest I ever got to a hot streak was probably 91. I played well in the PGA Championship and played reasonably well in a Ryder Cup. You once made 9 birdies in a row. That's what you'd call a hot streak, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it was... That was a hot streak, and I've had a few of them. I've been kind of a streaky player over my career.
You got pretty hot both ways.
Yeah, I did.
So where did that fit in the round? Like, was...
I started on the 10th hole at Glen Abbey up in Toronto, and I birdied 12 through 2. And Glen Abbey's a pretty hard course, but if there's ever 9 holes you could do it at, it would be these 9 because I had 4 par 5s in that stretch of 9 holes, which is really rare for that to happen. So, I mean, it was a good stretch of holes for sure.
Didn't you have a bunch of birdies in a row at Phoenix one year as well?
I had 32 birdies the year I won for 72 holes. that was a good week.
John, you had a no-hitter against the Royals in 2008. There's a superstition, isn't there, on the team?
Yeah, you're not supposed to talk to the pitcher.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I would go up and down the dugout and talk to guys because I didn't want it to go the other way.
Right.
So at that time in my career, I was very superstitious, so I almost kind of went the other way with it. You know, I'd still go and talk to Tech and the catcher and the pitching coach just to make sure we're all on the same page. And
I mean, like, in the 7th inning, like, a guy would come up to you and say, oh, by the way, you're throwing a no-hitter?
No, nobody would ever do that. But usually, as, like, the innings go on, the guys get further and further away from you. So, like, you'll just be sitting at the end of the bench. Or if you're in the middle of the bench, I mean, it would be noticeable if they panned in the dugout and saw you. Like, you got the plague or something
like
that.
When I was on that birdie streak, I'd made my 8th birdie in a row, and my son was caddying for me, and he was 14 at the time. And I knew the PGA Tour record was 8, so I just tied it. So I get up on the 5th hole at Glen Abbey. It's at Dogleg Right, par 5. It's number 2 now. And my son says, Dad, don't duck hook it over there by that fence like you did yesterday. He said, okay, thanks, sir. I'll try not to.
You know, I'm going to get into a 4-letter word here. I'm looking at you, by the way. Don't look over there.
Me?
Yeah. The yips. And you've seen it. I've seen it. It's, shooters get it, you know, pitchers get it. It's a psychological thing, really, isn't it? Where, you know, you've made up your mind you're going to do one thing and then you make 17 minor adjustments on the way.
I've had some bouts with them and I still have them. That's why I used the claw, which I went to in 2001. And the weirdest thing is when I use my conventional putting grip that I used all the way up until 2001, when I'm playing at home or in a practice round or on the putting green, I'm perfect. No yip whatsoever. I get out there in the first green of the tournament. If I tried that, I'd yip the crap out of it. My right hand would just shake.
Everything moves except your balls?
Everything, yeah, right. And it's just not pretty. So then you just got to go back to the claw. Various different iterations of it. I've gone under. I've gone over. I've mirrored it. I've one finger penciled it. I've tried everything. So, and sometimes you get the yips with the claw, so.
Well, you just try to confuse your hands, really, you know, so they don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's pretty much what the claw is.
Yeah, well, I mean, golf is famous for it, but I mean, how does it manifest itself in baseball?
I've dealt with it throwing to first base. So, I mean, I'm left-handed to see the runner picking guys off. If I knew how to fix it, you would fix it, you know?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure you would rather putt like this, but,
you
know, at least you have another way to putt. I don't have another way to throw a ball over there, so it's,
I'm
pretty much stuck. You've dealt with it, gone through some embarrassing moments with it, but we figured some different things out. I actually picked off 4 guys this year, so you know we're making adjustments as we're going and try to be click to the plate, hold the ball, do different things. But like I said, if I knew how to fix it, it would have been fixed a long time ago.
Right.
So you don't have to answer questions about it.
What happens in basketball?
Basketball is the free throw that really screws with guys' head. You know, typically, you know, I've been the guy that shoots the technical free throw. So somebody gets a tee, everybody goes down there and they can't cross over the half court line. Mm-hmm. And then you're one person standing there shooting the free throw. It's now quiet. So it's the most nerve-wracking thing because
you're the only one standing there.
Yeah, you're used to people being around
you.
Yeah, so now it's like what happens is guys short arm it.
Sorry, explain short arm to me. Is it just
like when you go to take your shot, you just kind of don't follow through. Like that because there's a nervousness.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And so what I started doing was in my routine, I started doing like this just to follow through. So once the ball's in my hand, I just duplicate that memory. And if you're at home, it's even worse because they expect you to make the free throw. You miss the first one if you're just shooting two free throws, and then there's like a low moan in the crowd. And then you're like, oh, damn. Now I really got to make this second one. And somebody on the sidelines, these guys make all this money, and he can't make free throws. Right.
Well, guys, thank you so much for being here with me. I've learned, I don't know about you, Mark, but I've learned more about baseball and basketball in the last hour than the last 25 years. It was really a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Oh.
Thanks, pal. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Ray Allen is an African-American man who's lived his life as a teetotaler, has treated his body as a temple, and owns an organic fast food restaurant. I, on the other hand, am none of those things. But that's what's great about this game of ours. If we have nothing in common except for golf, then we have everything in common that we need. I want to thank my three sofa potatoes for spudding out with me tonight and giving me insight into the lives that we lead and the games that we play. It really has been enlightening, although if we're being honest, I still have no f***ing idea what the infield fly rule is.
You may not know it, but I have no formal training as an interviewer.
You're just an argumentative asshole.
What about you?
I know, look at me.
Oh, yeah.
After all these years, I still have no idea what I'm doing.
You know, when this show was nominated for an Emmy,
that doesn't stop me from sitting down with the legends and newsmakers for interviews that please me.
Don't look at me for too long. You won't want him anymore.
This is your show.
For more of my brilliant stupidity, keep your digital devices handy.
All right, all right, all right.
Thank you, Ray, John, Mark, and as always, thank you, Anita, and you guys too. Thanks for joining me, Faherty fans. You can find more of the Faherty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Faherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Faherty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you, be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.